That's your cue to say yes.
This episode of Discover ADN is brought to you by Bourne Sequel and DB Snitch. DB Snitch is a once-off report service resulting in an in-depth examination of your existing database instances and recommendations to bring them up to industry standards, ensuring that your data is safe. DB Snitch gives you a comprehensive view of where your database currently stands, along with a customized game plan to get it to where it needs to be. Of course, Bourne Sequel offers both on-site and remote support. Find out more at bournesequel.ca/dbsnitch or by contacting Randolph West via email at info@bournesequel.ca with the keyword Discover in the subject line. Welcome to another episode of Discover ADN, a podcast dedicated to learning more about the many creative, intelligent, and interesting people that use app.net to communicate with the world. My name is Jason Irwin, and I am the host of this program. Join me in attaching a voice to the words and avatars we see flowing through our timelines, while also getting to know a little bit more about the people who make our social network such a nice place to visit. Want to be in the show or recommend somebody you think is interesting? Get in touch on app.net by sending a message to DiscoverADN. Today I have the pleasure of talking with Peter, who goes by the pseudonym Height8 on app.net. He lives in the lovely city of Toronto and, when not inventing odd things, can be found working as a CTO during the day. Please join me in welcoming Peter to Discover ADN. Hello.
Hi there.
Let's get right down to business. Can you tell us, when did you join app.net?
I was one of the backers of ADN on August 12, 2012. On August 13th, I actually upgraded that backing from a regular account to a developer account.
Well, that's interesting. Can you tell us why you joined app.net?
Well, I was following a fair number of developers on Twitter, including those that made third-party Twitter clients. There was a lot of blood in the water from Twitter choking the life out of third-party developers, and watching the slow death from a thousand cuts was distressing. ADN seemed like a lifeline, a fresh platform backed by like-minded individuals, somewhere where we were the customer rather than data to be sold. So that seemed to be a very straightforward decision for me, and I joined on immediately.
And that's also why you upgraded to a developer account the next day?
Well, you know, I thought it was an interesting and exciting time, and having a developer account would allow me to more fully explore the possibilities of ADN. Unfortunately, what happened shortly afterwards is that I had a huge spike in the number of projects I was doing. So I had intended on creating an ADN client software, but there wasn't enough time to do it justice. Now, I did renew my account, and I renewed it again at the developer level. So we'll see what's going to happen in the future.
You use a pseudonym on app.net. Can you tell us, where does Height8 come from?
There's a bit of a twisty answer to that. I use the moniker Height8, but I freely identify as Pete. So just about, you know, usually people know me as Pete. Back when the backing of ADN was finalized, they offered the backers the option of claiming their Twitter username, which is what I did. And I had been using Height8 as one of my handles in a few locations, but it wasn't my primary identifier. But it snowballed when I started using Twitter on April 7th, 2009. I hadn't intended for it to be my primary identifier, but I don't know if you're familiar with it, but there's an old Robert A. Heinlein quotation that goes along the lines of, "There is nothing in this world so permanent as a temporary emergency." So as it turned out, Height8 has sort of got a whole bunch of traction, and that's what I have stuck with recently. Now, the origins of Height8, if anyone is curious, they can go to www.height8.com and go to the bottom and look at the very bottom of the website in the footer, And there's a few clicky little things there, and you can see it came about during a period when I was contemplating the quality of work and work-life balance. So that's sort of the context of where that comes from.
All right, and those links can be found in the show notes. Let me ask this next question. What would you like to see more of on app.net?
Well, before the recent ADN State of the Union announcement, I would have said I'd like to see more communication and transparency from the ADN organization, along with perhaps a rethink of the developer incentive program. I had been thinking that ADN was coasting on its initial success, and the developer incentive program wasn't maybe really working. But now, I'd like to see a little less of the BSD is dying style doom and gloom, and see if there's some way to rethink the current box so that ADN doesn't lapse into a form of obscurity. I'm not loving ADN any less, but it seemed like there was a large initial outcry and a great many people pounced on the announcement as an I told you so moment. And some of the less invested people immediately started discussing an exodus. So for me, I would say less focus on the negative, more energy directed toward growth and the possibilities of ADN.
All right. Well, those are certainly some nice answers. Let's change gears a little bit. Can you tell us, what do you like to be known for?
Well, I think there's more than one answer to this question. On ADN, I would hope I would be known for having rational and hopefully interesting and occasionally insightful conversation, interspersed with maybe odd bits of humor and a touch of introspection. I try to save the short quips and witticisms for Twitter, where it's more acceptable, because for me, ADN feels much more like a place of nuanced discussion. A few slip through, though. I think in the end, that I'd like to be known on ADN as being someone who's interested in exchanging thoughts and ideas, willing to learn, willing to acknowledge and genuinely apologize for mistakes, and being known for trying to contribute meaningfully. But outside of ADN, I'd like to be known for being fair and open-minded, collaborative and approachable. I've been working with technology since the 1970s, so that means running my own businesses, working for other people in a wide variety of roles, running companies, often as hands-on CTO or VP technology, and doing lots of technology consulting in between and along the way. So that's given me the opportunity to work with some really talented people, both deep in the trenches and in the boardrooms, and the unique opportunity to experience, sort of in a hands-on way, the dramatic changes in the computers, electronics, and technology since the 1970s. So hardware, software, and the ways of thinking. And it's allowed me to invent some odd and interesting things as well.
Well, that's a pretty good segue to this next question, because what sort of odd and interesting things have you invented?
Well, some of the most interesting ones I can't actually talk about, which is a bit frustrating. But I do, you know, a lot of work normally under NDA agreements, and I take those as seriously as I can. But let's see, I've worked with a lot of early telephony and telecommunications technology on some of the early data communication protocols, for example. And I created one of the first languages for speech sampling, manipulation, and DTMF recognition, which these days you'd encounter that as a common IVR, which is interactive voice response. That's essentially the interactive menus for voicemail and the tech behind incoming phone call distribution, that sort of thing. We take all of that for granted now because it's a common part of our everyday experience, but I worked on the very first ones. And then I've got a few others, if you're interested.
I am.
I created a secure operating system in 6502 assembler for Apple II systems called Big Brother Secure System. This was in the 1980s. So companies could run an unattended secure sandbox operating system while offering dial-up remote access. Any unauthorized activities, exploits, command execution were all completely locked down. I've got a few other cute ones for you. I was the inventor of the Twirly Star. That was one of the first animated text cursors. I'm not sure if you're familiar with those, but it's a kind of a cursor that uses text characters, and it rotates through using a backslash character, a pipe character, and a forward character. And it uses ANSI escape codes or backspaces to keep rotating on the same spot. So that ended up being widely adopted in the 1970s and 1980s, and you can still see it on some Cisco routers if you do any command line configuration. So you'll notice that as it's going along, it's doing the little twirly star through all the setup. I created and operated some of the first online systems in North America for packet and dial-up modem on mainframes and mini computers, and eventually on the first microcomputers. And all of that predated BBSs and then what would be an explosion of growth of the online world. And let's see, I created one of the first online multiplayer real-time space combat and exploration games in the 1970s. What would probably be labeled an MMORTS and RPG these days. It ran as a subscriber service through the 1980s and beyond. It initially operated on printing text terminals at 75, 110, and 300 baud, connected to mainframe and mini computer backends. You could do real-time space combat against your friends, journey to planets, conduct trade, colonize planets, explore planets in a text-based RPG environment. So that was tremendously popular through the 70s, 80s, and a little bit beyond. And there's a lot more, but that should give you a general flavor.
So you've seen technology develop from the very rudimentary systems that we had in the 1970s all the way up to what we have today, nearly 40 years later. Can you share with us some of your thoughts about where you see technology going in the future?
Well, now the benefit and the curse of actually having gone through from the 1970s to the present with technology is that I can actually see that things are coming back almost in a way full circle to the way that people interact and operate with devices. I mean, because when we after the very beginning was, you know, quite primitive. I started with, you know, vacuum tube displays and hand toggling the bits of an individual byte to hand load bytes into computers. So, I mean, if we jump past that a little bit and we get to the first mainframes and mini computers, before even there were the desktop computers, you know, the whole paradigm was that you had a device that connected to a back end and your stuff was in the cloud in the back end. And all of your processing power and all of the things you wanted to do was in the cloud in the back end. And then everything shifted as people moved to microcomputers to doing everything in the front end and wanting to do it all in-house. And now we're slowly moving back to having devices that communicate over networks and communicate and, you know, put all of the heavy lifting in places that don't need to be necessarily in your pocket. So we've really kind of come full circle. So I'm waiting to see what the next cycle is going to be. But there's definitely a revisiting. So, you know, some of the people who worked through having the experiences of the 1970s and the 1980s and having to work with technology where you had to be frugal in what you were developing and frugal about how you were implementing and, you know, space and design considerations and power considerations and whatnot, they really have a whole bunch of experience that's directly applicable to where we're going. So I've noticed an unfortunate trend, especially with a lot of startups, that, you know, when they're looking for people, they're only interested in, you know, what have you done in the last 3 years? And if you've done anything in a language or a technology or a methodology that was from more than 3 years ago, you know, they're often hard pressed, especially if they're younger, to put any value on it whatsoever. So I see that we're coming full circle, and there's quite a lot of interesting people out there who have a lot of experience in these technologies and fields. So that sort of answers your question and raises another.
All right. Well, let's move on to this next question. Can you tell us about something that you like?
Well, rather than talk about more technology, what I'll tell you is I'll tell you something I like about ADN, and that is that I like the people. The quality of the interactions that we have here far surpass anything I've experienced on other social networks. With the increased character limits, I can have more nuanced discussions. I can reduce the chance that what I write will be misinterpreted through stunted messages. In general, the quality of discussions here has been high, and the participants I've found are willing to acknowledge and often consider things rather than just dismiss concepts out of hand that don't fit their worldview. So, you know, it is by far a superior bunch of people who are on this platform, and I certainly hope it'll continue for quite some time.
Do you see the community on ADN as being similar to Usenet pre-AOL or IRC, or is it something completely different? Ooh.
Well, I think that some of the people who are on ADN may be refugees from those systems, but and you know, certainly I'm on IRC regularly still as well. I sort of gave up Usenet when Google kind of poked their fingers there. Not that there's anything wrong with Google poking their fingers into Usenet, but it just kind of became absorbed into other systems for me. So that's really when I lost interest in Usenet. So I wouldn't say that there's necessarily so much of a similarity in that. I think the people who were initially willing to invest, you know, to put money where their mouth is, were willing to, I guess the expression is, put skin in the game to have something at stake. And therefore, they brought with them the fact that there is value in, you know, in the contribution. They weren't there, you know, to get a free account on Twitter and fool around and write, you know, spammy garbage and waste everyone's time. You know, they put up some money, and they came in expecting that other people who had also put up some money were going to have some interesting conversations back and forth. And, you know, the increased character limits and the people were willing to give it a shot. And so many of the people are much more open-minded. And I think that some of the initial people who moved over were also some of the smart, savvy, hip, interesting, whatever outdated words you'd like to use. Some of those developers who were moving away from Twitter, people who developed iOS applications, Android applications, they were moving over to ADN. So, you know, there was a nice rich base of interesting people to start out with. And that's, I think, you know, that's the roots of ADN where it started from.
This is another really good segue, I think, because who are some of these interesting people that you enjoy following? Can you tell us about three people you enjoy communicating with and why?
Well, certainly. But it almost feels like a disservice to single out just three people, because there are a great and many interesting and thought-provoking people on ADN, and a number of them have already been mentioned by your past guests. So while I enjoy all of your company, or I wouldn't have followed you, I'll offer these three. MD Hughes. I like MD Hughes's raw, no-holds-barred, take-no-prisoners, upfront, direct approach to topics. There's a sort of no-bullshit sensibility that I find very refreshing, along with often quite a bit of healthy sarcasm. And Farabee. I find Chris is often doing something interesting with hardware and software, and he seems to be one of the generous people who is willing to share and discuss his insights. And also Joe Workman, who is always moving forward with web technology and engaging people with his Rapid Weaver Hangouts. So those are three people amongst a whole batch of interesting and fun and thought-provoking people on ADN.
All right. Well, thank you for those recommendations, and thank you again for being my guest today.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. I'm glad we had a chance to chat, and I'm definitely looking forward to hearing more Discover ADN episodes in the future.
Well, thank you very much. There will be many more to come. This concludes the 30th episode of Discover ADN. Once again, I would like to thank Peter for taking the time to chat with me. Show notes for today's episode can be found online at discoveradn.10centuries.com. That's the number 10, centuries.com. And I would also like to thank our sponsor for this episode, Born Sequel. Have a nice day!